My guests today on the Saturday Cafe are Alistair Fraser and Natalie Haas. That was the Pitnick Reef Ferryman from their new CD, Highlander's Farewell. Welcome to the Saturday Cafe.
Thank you very much.
It's very
great to be back.
It's
Eugene.
Very good to have you here. I had thought, and apparently I've got it backwards, that bringing cello to Scottish music was sort of new and different, but in fact, what's the real story?
Yeah, a lot of people assume that it's a kind of a new twist, you know, but and I suppose it is actually a new twist on an old idea. And what we love to say is that the fiddle and cello was the dance band of choice in Scotland for all of the 18th century, before that, and well into the 19th century. they kind of ruled the roost, you know, the big house dances, the gatherings in the assembly rooms in Edinburgh, and at village halls, you know, Neil Gow, the great doyen of Scottish fiddlers, and known as a wonderful dance fiddler up in Perthshire in central Highlands in Scotland, played pretty much exclusively with a cellist, normally his brother on the cello, Donald Gow, and Scott Skinner, another great fiddler from the more of the Victorian era, 18th century going into 19th century. He was actually 19th century going into 20th century. he began his life playing cello for dances along with his fiddle mentor, Peter Milne.
I actually just discovered that I played a concertina version of one of his tunes from Cindy Manxon earlier on the show.
Cool.
Doing a little research.
Yeah, so he began playing the cello for dandy. Two of them would walk to a dance with a fiddle and a cello and a cloth sack slung over their shoulder, and they'd play for the dancing, and then Skinner moved from the cello onto the fiddle at some point. But there's a definite history of fiddle and cello in Scotland, which we love to tap into.
How did the cello fall by the wayside? Was it becoming a Victorian parlor instrument?
Pianos, accordions, later guitars, I think all kind of took over as bigger and louder, and cello sort of got elbowed out.
Do any of the original fiddle cello arrangements, are they still around, or did you have to kind of reinvent this?
They are around, and we've reinvented it. it's really interesting, you know, the Scottish fiddle tradition on the surface is very well documented. There are lots and lots of books. But if you actually, you know, go below the surface, you find that a lot of these printed collections in the 18th century, which have fiddle lines and cello lines galore, lots of them, often the cello, the bass line or the cello line, the bowed bass as it was called, was just kind of added in as a very scanty guide as to what one might do. And of course, the people who were playing cello at that time, they wouldn't have read that anyway. They would have made up their own thing. It'd be like putting a guitar chords on a fiddle tune session today, you know. So, you know, you can glean a little bit from these printed collections, but I think the actual bowed bass that was used was much more alive and inventive than you would ever get from the printed page. And being alive and inventive is kind of where we move on from, and that's, we've given ourselves the challenge of saying, okay, it's 2012, we've been touring together for 12 years, you know, so and we've said, so what now, what do we do in this day and age with these two instruments, and get them to speak and kind of get them to sound full-bodied, and hopefully so that the sum is greater than the sum of the parts, you know.
We should listen to an example. Have you a suggestion?
There's so many tunes to choose from, but again, on the new CD, I think this is it's a piece that is called McLaughlin's Strathspey, and it kind of, it has a little glance into the more Baroque classical influences that you might find in this music, but it's definitely a Scottish Strathspey, and you know, we use that language to play that tune, and it's one that I wrote for a wedding, which is often the best deadline you can have for writing a tune, because you just got to come up with it, and that has kind of inspired a few tunes from me, and this is one that we've had great fun arranging together, and really exploring the possibilities.
McLaughlin Stress Bay on Saturday Cafe. My guests today on the Saturday Cafe are Alistair Fraser and Natalie Haas. That was from their most recent CD. We heard McLaughlin Stress Bay, a wedding present. Now, I know people who aren't musicians who think writing a song or a tune for a wedding is a cheap and easy present. I'm assuming that they've got it completely backwards, just like I do.
I'll tell you a quick, I had a deadline for a wedding one time. And on the way to the wedding, I discovered that it was a very small affair and that it was only going to be like 10 people in a circle on a beautiful piece of ground overlooking the ocean. And we all had to contribute something momentous to the occasion. And I thought, oh my gosh, I better have a tune ready, you know. So I actually then began to think about this tune and I made it up. And when I got to the wedding, I blithely went ahead and played two tunes for the bride and groom that I had just made up like during the half hour preceding. And then I learned the tunes that I played from the video of the wedding. And I actually kind of liked them. So I kind of got lucky, I think. But, that was a bit too close to the edge.
Natalie mentioned just sort of in passing classical influences coming in before we played the tune. And I'm wondering, since you're a classically trained musician who also plays, you know, Scottish dance music, how much of that influence kind of floats over into these arrangements and into these tunes?
Well, I think both of us are classically trained, actually, and we both kind of exclusively play Scottish music now. So I wouldn't say that I'm a classical musician by any means, but... I think just the whole sense of chamber music is definitely a big part of what we do, that we're not just playing tunes, we're really going for more arranged pieces and thinking more about dynamics and textures and really going for this special blend of sounds with these two stringed instruments that, you know, people tend to focus more on that kind of thing in the classical world than they do in folk music, I think. Mm-hmm. But...
I think where we diverge a lot from the classical approach is in that we're playing what I call multilingual fiddle. You know, when I play the fiddle, I'm playing in Gaelic or I'm playing in Northeast Scottish, which means I'm using ornamentation, bowing ideas, ways of sounding on the instrument that come from that land, that place, and it's rich in that. You know, I talk about having fistfuls of haggis in your fiddle or your cello, and that's one of the things we try to get across in all the workshops that we do in the fiddle camps and so on, is that we're trying to get people excited about playing idiomatically on their instruments, so they're actually informed in a way that the playing sounds as though it has tasted the water, you know, from from any given place. And you don't have to have come from there, but you have to have learned it like a language, you know, by using immersion techniques or whatever, so you actually bring the richness into the sound that you're trying to make.
Terroir for fiddle, the term from winery, that the flavor of the ground that
beautiful
fiddle grows in.
Yeah. And it makes a huge difference, you know, and that's quite a big leap from a lot of the sort of violin education and mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So we choose how we want to sound, you know, and we may go to Spain and we we're with a fiddle camp there also, and we try to learn how to sound Galician on our instruments, or how to sound like we're from Catalonia, and it goes on. It's a very rich tapestry out there, which is really a lot of fun to explore.
You're going to Glasgow next weekend, I understand, and doing.
That's right. We're at this massive Celtic Connections Festival, which is just a great midwinter feast, if you like. And we're actually, I think we finally achieved this idea of creating what we call the Fiddle Village in the heart, in the hub of this festival, to kind of make the statement that it's great to go and hear this music and to hear the great players, of which there are many, playing in concert. But I think one of the most important things about the music is hands-on, getting involved, picking up a fiddle yourself, getting your cello out of the closet and learning, you know, learn a song. So we host for the weekend and teach fiddle and cello and kind of radiate that out into the festival. And we're also giving a concert or two there. So it's going to be fun.
And tonight you're giving a concert here in Eugene, for which we're very grateful. 7:30 at the Jaqua Concert Hall of the Shedd Institute.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting to come back to Eugene. It's kind of a home, feels like a home from home in a way for me, because as you know, I've been coming here for many years, as you reminded me this morning.
Well, thank you for joining me on the Saturday Cafe. It's really wonderful having you both. We should go out with one more tune. Natalie, what's your choice?
Let's hear Jig Run Rig and the Ramney Cayley, two tunes from the West Coast, modern tunes.
Alistair Fraser and Natalie Haas, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.